The calendar has finally turned to the final month in 2024, and while the weather across various parts of the globe may be getting colder, the action around the NBA is finally starting to heat up for once and for all. We hope that all of you who are listening in yet once again enjoy yourself over the course of the Thanksgiving holiday and got a chance to get a good meal beside your loved one. In addition to getting everything you were clamoring to get over the course of Black Friday and Cyber Monday, you got some deals along the way for the shoppers out there. It's the time has now come for us to officially reconvene and have our weekly dialogue on all things strictly pertaining to the association, as we are only just a few weeks away from the annual five-game slate of games set to take place on Christmas Day. What's going on, everyone, and welcome into episode four of the New 24 podcast for our audience that's staying tuned and keeping track of all episodes, wherever you may be listening from, be it on your way to your day-to-day grind, or in the comfortable confines of your dwelling space and so forth. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and I'm running the show, as always, right beside my partner and the co-host himself, who goes by the name of Torrence Stagger. What's going on, man?
It's good, man. Hope everybody enjoyed their holiday. Caught a few games. Had a good time. And let's get it, episode four.
Let's do it. In last week's episode of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrence discussed the emergence of rookie guard Jared McCain of the Philadelphia 76ers, who in the month of November averaged 19.1 points per game on 45% shooting and made a successful case to be considered as the early front runner to take home Rookie of the Year honors come season's end after being inserted into Philadelphia's starting lineup following injuries to key players, while also highlighting the play of another first-year talent in Los Angeles Lakers forward Dalton Knecht, among several other rising young stars who should be on the rest of basketball fans' radar in the months and years to come. As we will shift away from the youth movement in the NBA just a little bit to discuss a few teams that have battled against one another in playoff series that seem to be going in completely opposite directions. But before we officially get into the topics of discussion this week, let's take a brief moment to show some love to a few of the game's top ballers and performers over the last week in our opening tip-off segment portion of the show, starting with a player that is continuing to get better by the game and could possibly find himself garnering All-Star honors for the first time in his career this season in Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who became just the 11th player ever in NBA history to record at least 25 or more points and dish out at least 5 or more assists while also shooting 50% or better from the field in 4 consecutive games at age 23 or younger, joining the likes of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James in the Hallowed Club. In addition to San Antonio Spurs star center, Victor Wembanyama, who recently became the youngest big man ever in league history to record a 30-point triple-double this past weekend, is the man who took home Rookie of the Year honors and All-Defensive First-Team honors a season ago, dropped 34 points en route towards hauling down 14 rebounds, and dishing out 11 assists to help San Antonio secure a close road dub late against the Sacramento Kings, and a pair of teammates who are beginning to find their stride beside one another in Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks, as the All-Star duo recorded 25-plus points and 10-plus assists together in the same game for the third time, marking the most by any duo in league history, and the man known by many as the Greek Freak recorded the first 40-point triple-double of his career, alongside of Dame Dollar's 25-point 10-assist outing to lead the Bucks to their sixth straight win against the Wizards over the holiday weekend. So, with all of that being said, Torrence, what are some of the marquee things over the last week or so that stood out to you around the NBA since our previous episode?
Oh, man, let me start with the Dallas Mavericks going 5-1 without Luka. I think that was real important, real big. And it was only 2 30-point games from Kyrie against Atlanta and Utah. And they beat also OKC and Denver and the Knicks over that stretch. I just think that was a good look. Mostly because you got your star player out, an MVP candidate. And it didn't take for Kyrie to go into hero ball himself for them to get those victories. Guys stepped up around them, Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively. I think it bodes well if you're a Mavericks fan to see that, like, especially going into you know, winter and Christmas. Seeing them finally turning around, and now Luka's back. I don't know. I think Dallas can start climbing up the standards. Also, oh, you got something?
Go ahead. My bad. Go ahead.
Also, we got the Cavs beating the Celtics. That was a good win for the Cavs. That was one of the few losses they have this season. Darius Garland stepped back up. He had 22 this game. He only had 8 the last game. Donovan Mitchell, another 35-point game against the Celtics. I know JB and Derek White were both out, but I don't know. I think that was still a good win for the Cavs overall. You know, the Celtics are pretty much the team to go through in the East. The Cavs have been the number one seed this year. And, you know, despite the injuries, getting that win against them now 1-1 on the season. And well, both games very close. I think that was a big win for the Cavs. And last, RJ Barrett in Toronto. Now, RJ been hooping this year, you know. Kind of the forgotten guy in his draft. You know, Zion went number one to the Pelicans. Ja went 2 to the Grizzlies. And RJ, you know, he went to the Knicks, which is a big market, but you got 2 household names above you. And even though he hasn't, like, reached the superstar level both of those guys have reached, he's been by far more consistent than both. Would you take both guys over him still? Yeah, I'd say pretty much. But, I mean, this season he averaging, what, 24, 6, and 6. He's always healthy, shooting 45% this year. He just had 37 against Miami. I mean, the Raptors are struggling. They're not that good, but, I mean, it's not because of RJ. So I just want to, you know, give him a shout out on his season and just staying consistent. Like I said, man, he was the number 3 pick in that draft. And though he's not Zion and Ja, he's been more consistent. He's been more healthy than both guys during the duration of all of their careers.
Yeah, you bring up a great point about RJ Barrett, who's currently averaging close to 24 a night with 6 rebounds and 6 assists. Just came off a 37-point game against Miami in 38 minutes of work, and they ended up winning that game by 3 at home. And he added, on top of that, 7 rebounds and 5 assists. You know, he's getting to the line at a high rate. He looks like he's finding a little bit of more stability and comfort playing in Toronto. And I guess being back home has really done his career a lot of wonders. And then you talk about the Dallas Mavericks finding a way to weather the storm in the absence of Luka. Quentin Grimes is a guy that's not getting talked about enough in my book. You know, early on in the year, he was struggling a little bit to find his footing. Jason Kidd benched him. A lot of people thought Jason Kidd was out of pocket for that. You know, a lot of criticism he drew. But ever since he's came back from that moment, he's been putting up some stellar numbers, and he's made up his presence felt in the Mavs starting lineup. And I don't think they can really take him out. When you consider everything that Quentin Grimes has been through, such as last year playing in Detroit, being exiled from the Mecca that we know as the New York Knicks, to only playing in like 5 games with Detroit, averaging less than 6 points per game after putting together an incredible rookie season. And when he showed so much promise of being a 3-and-D wing, and to be involved in a trade with Detroit where they had to dump what they consider to be bad salary on top of him, you know, to move him, New York. You know, he's making the most out of his situation in Dallas. And he's a guy that's always had a ton of promise and showed a lot of potential dating back to his time in college when he was at Kansas and Houston. And to see him back close to home in the state of Texas, being a Houston guy, I think is doing him well. So those are two guys that have really played well and look good. And you talk about Cleveland. I was impressed with Donovan Mitchell late in that fourth quarter. He looked like a guy that since the moment and was ready to attack, didn't let the early struggles in the first half get to him. And those guys are starting to really come together. And after putting together a good start, losing a couple of games the way they did at the top of the week, to close out the week with a win against Boston and still remain atop of the Eastern Conference standings entering week 7, I think that's a phenomenal thing. But the things that stood out to me, go ahead, before I let Torrance go before I go.
I just had a question about the Dallas with the Quentin Grimes thing.
Yeah.
So that would be him replacing Klay Thompson in the starting lineup.
I believe so.
So you think it's like it's this early in the season, you think it's time to pull that trigger? If you Dallas?
Pull the trigger for what? Talk about making a big move at the
No,
deadline?
as far as just swapping Quentin Grimes into the starting lineup.
I think they've already done it. I mean, because if you look at the depth chart, and then Klay Thompson's out right now. That's
Yeah.
something we got to consider because he currently has a foot injury and he's questionable for Tuesday's game against the Grizzlies, the day in which we record, and that game will be final once this podcast released, or this episode releases rather. So it with Thompson out, he's gonna get the minutes, and then Naji Marshall is out as well. Naji Marshall right now is dealing with an illness, and he's taking advantage of guys being out, and you could put him at the three alongside of Luka, Kyrie, and then PJ Washington, and then Derek Lively is day to day right now.
Right.
So
So
Gafford will more than
they
likely
start,
play at the five.
right. But I'm saying they started the season with Klay at the three. So that's
Yeah,
what I'm
I
saying.
know.
So if it's up to you, you're saying that you would put Quentin Grimes in there as the start at the three over Klay.
With the
Even
way
if,
he's playing right now, I would. You
okay.
know, he's shooting the ball at a great clip. I don't know if it's sustainable, but you got to ride the high hand. You know, in the NBA, you don't want to play around with momentum. And we're gonna get into a team that, you know, just recently gotten off to a good start, but has struggled a little bit as of late, and they're trying to figure out some things as it pertains to their rotation. So when I look at Dallas and I'm seeing the way Quentin Grimes is playing, let that dude rock out.
Yeah, understandable.
But the marquee thing that stood out to me over the last week was the play that I saw going to my first NBA Cup game here in Chicago between the Bulls and the Celtics. You know, that was a big game for Group C. The winner would have had a chance, or if the Bulls had won, rather, they would have won Group C by way of tiebreaker. And with the Celtics winning, not only do they eliminate the Bulls, but they give themselves a chance to potentially buy for a wild card spot in the NBA Cup should Orlando beat New York, and should Milwaukee or Detroit like win by 6 points within their respective matchup. So they put themselves in a good position. But the thing that I liked about it was the atmosphere at the game. Even though it was a regular season game on a Black Friday, it felt a lot like a playoff game with the way that the intensity was between the two teams. You could tell that it meant a lot to them. Like, I've never seen a game where a team had a 6-point lead, knowing that the game was wrapped up. They call the timeout, Boston did, and then they draw up a play to get Sam Hauser three in the corner and win by nine as opposed to six. And the reason why they wanted to do that, so that they could get a little bit of a boost in the point differential department. So, you know, in the event that it does come down to tiebreakers or what happened. So that was real cool to see and get a chance to witness, because let's be real. No disrespect to the Bulls, but like this is really what you were playing for. If you could have got a chance to get into the NBA Cup quarterfinals, that would have been a cool thing to see. And I see some young teams trying to take advantage of playing in the NBA Cup, such as the Detroit Pistons, who are currently undefeated in NBA Cup play, and have put themselves in a great position to make it to the quarterfinal round of the NBA Cup with their play. Cade Cunningham was recently talking in Indianapolis following a win against the Pacers on Friday night about how guys really want a chance to go to Vegas and play on a national stage. And I think that's great for those guys considering what all transpired a year ago when they went on this historic losing skid and they weren't even able to get their ninth win until well after New Year's Day. So that even though they're under 500, they're playing a competitive brand of basketball under J.B. Bickerstaff. And it's been refreshing to see. And young guys like Cade, Jalen Duren making strides, Jaden Ivey, a guy that was often maligned and ridiculed and was in Monty Williams' doghouse, is really taking that to heart. You see him hitting big time shots and game winners against the Raptors, I believe it was at home, to, you know, help Detroit win some close games late, games that they were struggling to close out often last year. But this year, they've gotten a little bit better in that department. And then the last thing that really stood out to me when I really look at the league right now is the way in which Peyton Pritchard is playing. Peyton Pritchard right now is looking like the consistent favorite to win Sixth Man of the Year. And in his last four outings, he's put up 20 points or more, and he's also hitting at least four threes a game. And he's nearly doubled his scoring average, if I'm not mistaken, as I currently pull the numbers up right now. Like, in the Celtics' win against the Miami Heat on Monday night, he scored 25 on 10 of 17 shooting from the floor, hit five threes. And over his last four games, he's averaging 24.5 points per game, including one game in which he shot over 60% from the field. And he's come off the bench in all of them. He's been a godsend for this team, especially in games and on nights where a Jaylen Brown may not be playing or Derrick White might not be playing. The fact that they have that option and is a luxury unlike any other for Joe Mazzulla and his coaching staff. For a guy that came out of Oregon with a lot of promise and a lot of potential, to see him actually doing some of the things he was doing in college at the NBA level, it's been pretty cool, especially when I was one of those people that had a lot of questions about his game. And he's actually holding up a little bit as well defensively. So let's get into the main topic at hand for this week's episode, starting with a discussion of a Western Conference team whose season ended at the hands of an in-state rival in the play-in a season ago, and now finds themselves seeking to figure out how to get back on track after getting off to a hot start to tip off the 24-25 campaign. Through the first 15 games of the season, the Golden State Warriors sat atop of the West Standards with a 12-3 record. It's a team that has captured four NBA titles in the last decade, has gone from being in the number one spot to sliding a few spots down in the recent wake of a recent four-game losing streak over the last week that has led many to pose questions as of late. Golden State still remains among the top 10 in offensive and defensive rating, has suffered all four losses in games where they have been within 5 points in the last 5 minutes, scoring just 6 points on a total of 18 clutch possessions during that time span, all despite outscoring opponents by 14.5 points per 100 possessions in the 220 minutes that Draymond Green and Stephen Curry have managed to share the floor together over their last nine games, as the Warriors have been outscored by 4.6 points per 100 possessions in the 80 minutes with one on the floor without the other, and are a minus 21.5 per 100 in the 132 minutes where neither Green or Curry are on the floor. During the Dubs' loss against Phoenix on Saturday, Torrance, Golden State was outscored Phoenix, rather, by 4 points when Curry was on the floor. Steve Kerr has used his bench way more than any other coach in the league this year, as he managed to play all 13 guys who suited up in that contest. Shortly after the game, Curry sort of indicated with his post-game comments that it might be time for Kerr to utilize a traditional rotation in an effort to help guys get in a better rhythm. Most NBA head coaches, they won't utilize more than 9 or 10 players in your average regular season out. Some might stretch it to 11 at best, depending on various circumstances. Do you think that Golden State's refusal to shorten their rotation has led to their recent troubles?
No, I won't say it's because of that, because I think that's a huge part of their success early on this season. When you plan 13 guys and the other team's playing eight, let's just look at this logically. The eight, they're going to be more tired than the 13. The 13, you only got guys playing 16, 20 minutes. So defensively, the Warriors have been, like, they've been getting after it defensively this season. That's one thing I can't take away from them. And a lot of that has to do with the guys, like, the energy available to guys. Guys are only in there for short bursts. So you're getting, like, a lot of effort from Pazinski, Milton, GP2. He's always bringing it defensively. And, of course, you got Draymond anchoring the defense. So I don't think the rotation really is hindering them, as it's really more so out of necessity to me, personally. Like, they need to play as many guys just to have an advantage night to night, because – other than that, they don't have many advantages as a team to win.
I look at this, the lack of size, and I can understand why Golden State is playing that many guys, especially when they like to blitz a lot within their defensive schemes and defensive coverages, and that's led to them forcing a lot of turnovers and being able to get out and run in transition, an area that we know that they exceed in exceptionally well when they're playing at a high level under Steve Kerr. However, I do think they may need to shorten it just a tad bit. And maybe, you know, as opposed to 13, you play 11. But sometimes it's hard for guys to get in their rhythm a little bit. And with the injury to DeAndre Melton, who is going to be out for the season, I believe, after suffering a partially torn ACL, what have you, other guys are going to have to step up. But you got to find some level of stability and allow these guys to have some consistency in regards to getting their rhythm on a more consistent basis. I like the way that Golden State has come out to start the year. I think where they struggle a lot more than anything, as opposed to the rotations, is with finding somebody that can take a little bit of the offensive load off of Steph Curry's shoulders. I think that's where they struggle. I think Golden State is one of those teams that may need to look at seeking to find a second option that Steph can play beside that on certain nights can take the load off of him a little bit, because it's obvious that he has a mighty heavy load to carry. And at this stage of his career, while he's still exceptionally great, there are some nights where you can see the toll that it takes on them. Like they're playing guys that are on two-way contracts right now, such as Spencer, an incredible amount of minutes, and he's giving them a boost defensively. But sometimes you can tell on the offensive end, you know, it's times where he's struggling. And when that happens, and Steph, you know, got a mighty load to carry, like it just makes the battle a lot harder to continue to win night in and night out. And their schedule is going to get tough, too. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But I'll pass it back to you, Tom.
No, I mean, just one thing I'd say really to counter that is, I mean, most of these guys can only really bring it defensively, especially on the perimeter. Like you said, if we lack in size, the best thing we can do is attack up and down the court defensively on the perimeter. So, yeah, you know, you don't want to play so many guys. Guys need their rhythm. But at the same time, like I said, they don't have a lot of talent on the team. So the whole next man up mentality, at least early on in the season, it sets a good precedent, like, for the roster. Like, you really might play tonight. Do they all have to play? No, of course not. Like right. We said, the 8 or 9 is usually ideal. But, hey, if you want to put in a we all in, best way to show it. And, well, of course, you got to consider that guys are being auditioned, too. Because we got it's a lot of repetition with certain roles on the team. That's why guys are so interchangeable, because we're pretty much asking the same thing out of each position on the court or on the team.
And the one fortunate thing for Golden State, if you're looking at NBA Cup play, they've officially clinched Group C in the Western Conference to put themselves a step closer towards having a chance to play for some extra money advancing to the quarterfinal round in the NBA Cup. But they got a tough slate of games on the schedule that'll waste them. Like, they're going to face the Houston Rockets this week, the Minnesota Timberwolves twice over the course of this coming weekend, in addition to also facing the likes of the Memphis Grizzlies, LA Clippers, the Lakers, Phoenix Suns, and the Cleveland Cavs later on in the month of December. The Warriors currently sit fourth in the West standings as of this recording, entering their NBA Cup group play finale against the Denver Nuggets, which will go final once this drops. Do you think that Golden State will still be within the top four of the West by the time New Year's Day arrives?
By the time New Year's arrives? Nah, I don't think they'll be there. I mean, you got teams like Dallas, they're getting healthy. You got Phoenix, they're finally healthy. We'll see how long that goes. But if you told me who's pretty much going to be the better teams over the next month, considering the Warriors' schedule as well, I'd say we'd have OKC, Dallas, Phoenix, and I'm going to say Houston still in that top four by the time New Year's comes.
Yeah, Houston right now is looking legit. You know, we had a day, I didn't even get into this at the opening tip-off segment portion of the show, but we had a day where you had the top two seeds in the East going at it, as well as the top two seeds in the West. And that was the first time we had a day like that in 12 years in the NBA. So, yeah, Houston's looking like a force to be reckoned with, especially after putting on the show and knocking off OKC at home, getting a nice comeback win after getting beat up by them in their first matchup to start the year. But if you don't see Golden State being in the top four of the West, do you believe that Mike Dunleavy Jr., Warriors general manager, will seek to be aggressive at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I don't know if aggressive would be the word I would use. I mean, because that's pretty much that's media. We only know how aggressive they were later on in reports. Now, does he know that there are things they need? Yeah, they need somebody at center. They need at least one body. Two would be ideal. Like, they legit don't have any 7-footers on the roster. I don't think they have somebody that's like a legit 6'10". So, no, I don't think Jackson Davis, I don't believe he's 6'10" either.
He about 6'9", 6', yeah.
So, in addition to that, I think the most important thing is, like you alluded to earlier, who's going to be the guy to take the stress off of steps back offensively, and also somebody that can help anchor the defense defensively with Draymond? Because you got to always consider something with the Warriors. You had Andre Iguodala over there for a long time. He's one of the greatest defenders of all time, along with Draymond Green. Then you also had a Kevin Durant there as well. And in 2022, in the finals, Andrew Wiggins stepped his game up to a high level defensively. So, and he's kind of, you know, Wiggins is kind of weird. You don't know if he's declining. You don't know if he's not giving full effort. So you always don't know with him. If he's motivated, then he looks like a former number one pick. But then he just kind of just settles into a role and just kind of seems to chill. But I don't want to question, like, any NBA player's effort.
I get what you're saying. You're saying that he's up and down. And I think that's always been the number one thing when it comes to evaluating the career of Andrew Wiggins that many people have said.
Because I would say the Warriors don't have a true superstar on the team. Like, of course, Steph Curry in name is a superstar. But night to night, he's not bringing it like 2015, 2016 stuff anymore. And, I mean, he's older now. And the same can be said for Draymond defensively. They don't have an all-star level two-way player, to keep it in simpler terms. That's what they kind of need on this team. You have depth. You have experience. You have coaching. Like you said, who's the second guy?
Yeah, that's my biggest question with them. I'm concerned as to whether or not they'll finish the month of December within the top four in the West, because that schedule, man, they got a lot of heavy hitters coming up. And I remember me and you, we had a lot of conversations about Golden State prior to launching the first episode of this podcast about the hot start that they had. You know, we weren't trying to shit on Golden State or whatever. We were just talking about how they benefited from the strength of schedule or the lack thereof to start the season. Now you start to see this schedule getting a little bit tougher, and some guys are starting to get nicked up, like Draymond Green, I believe, is dealing with a calf injury, and he was listed as doubtful last time I checked for their game against Denver. Like I said earlier, and I've said a few times, that'll be final once this episode drops. But, like, it's looking like a chance that he might not play. We don't know how long that calf injury might linger for. So if that's taking him out for the rest of the week, we talk about some big matchups that he's going to be out of against teams that are either at the top of the standings, such as Houston, or teams that's like within the borderline of the play-in round, like the Minnesota Timberwolves, that are seeking to climb back up the top of the West and get to another Western Conference Finals as they did a season ago.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like I said, that's putting a lot of pressure on Steph to really come through with these next 5 to 6 games. And we got the NBA Cup as well. So, and I still believe that, you know, you a betting man. I think the Warriors winning that NBA Cup is a good bet to have. So, I mean, they're pretty the oldest team, I believe, right now that's in position to clinch for the actual quarterfinals right now. You got, what, Houston and San Antonio, the other two teams in the West right now. Mm-hmm. So, Man, I would put my money on Golden State right now. But we talking about long term this season for the Larry O'Brien, the NBA Finals. Yeah, the Warriors, they got to address getting either some size or getting a second option in there. Ideally, a first option if we want to just get all the way into the talks, you know, of getting another superstar in there possibly. But realistically, yeah, second option or a big man.
I would think
And I do
that
you
would
have.
be their plan. I would think that it would be their plan or within their best interest to try and get another superstar. Because if you want to keep Steph intact there as a happy man, at some point I think you're gonna have to do it. You really gotta consider doing it. I don't know if it moves the needle enough for them to win it all this year, but I think it can move the needle enough for them to stay within the thick of things. Potentially have a brighter future down the road.
Well, right now at this moment, I can't think of a superstar that would be even available or truly
Me
disgruntled with their situation for that to happen. But what
either.
I will say in the short term, you got Miles Turner. I believe he's on an expiring deal in Indiana. I think that'll be a solid pickup. We know the Bulls are trying to get rid of Vooch. That might be a solid pickup. I mean, they just got to get somebody up in there that's 7 feet tall that can play some minutes at some point during the game. Like they legit, when it comes, like the Spurs, they just were overwhelmed with Wemby. Like
Yeah,
it was
I
just
watched that game.
like of course he's 7'5" and he's gonna be too much for everybody at some point, but like he was like for real just too much for the Warriors. Like it was just like, all right, man, like he can for real do whatever he want to do against them. So. The same thing with Hardenstein the other night. He had like 14 rebounds the other night. Like, yeah, Draymond at 14 as well, but like, it's different. Like when a guy can for real just box like the whole team up.
As I told you, I was at the Celtics Bulls game and I heard a lot of rumblings about a possibility of Nikola Vucevic being linked to Golden State. That's becoming a popular rumor right now. And that's definitely something that I could see because he fits the style of play that they like to play. You know, he's going to get up some threes. And yeah, he do give him a big body. And even though he's not the most physical guy that like to bang, like you said, it would definitely be a massive upgrade considering the personnel that they have. As me and you have both talked about how like the size that they had during the championship era at the five spot is definitely not what they have right now. But I want to move away from all of the questions that loom large in Golden State to highlight the recent stretch from a rival of theirs that's currently seeking to remind their peers around the league that they still possess enough talent to contend when healthy and sit a game above them as of this recording in the West standings. For those who don't know who we're talking about, that is the Memphis Grizzlies, who have climbed all the way to third place, courtesy of a six-game winning streak as a return of Ja Morant following his eight-game absence due to a hip injury, and Desmond Bane, among other key rotational pieces, has provided the franchise and the home of the Blues with a major boost on what is already one of the NBA's deepest teams when it comes to depth. Although one could argue the Grizzlies have taken advantage of a soft part of their schedule lately with wins against the Sixers, Bulls, Blazers, Pistons, and Pelicans during their current win streak, Memphis has found a way to withstand injuries to several key players over the first quarter of the season and enter week seven of the year among the top teams in the West. I know that we recently discussed the play of the rookies there, Zach Edey and Jalen Wells in episode three last week, who have provided positive contributions on the floor in the absences of their core three, in addition to Scottie Pippen Jr., when he received starting minutes prior to being moved back to the bench in place of Ja Morant. When you look at the depth that the Grizzlies have and the talent that they possess, do you believe that they have what it takes to be regarded as a legitimate contender in the West right now?
No, I don't see it right now for the Grizzlies, me personally. On paper, it looks good as far as the depth, the talent. They always seem to be able to find guys. You know, you mentioned Scottie Pippen Jr., Jalen Wells, GG Jackson, who's out.
Yeah.
But they're always hurt. Somebody is it, it we find out about these guys because of injuries. Like Desmond Bane, you know. I like Desmond Bane, but he's just recently coming back. We know that right. Ja is he's on an any play basis. Any play. Marcus Smart, the veteran on the team. He's always been dealing with injuries. So yeah, on paper, they appear to have depth, but they're always dealing with some type of injuries over there. And not to get too far ahead, but I still think they missing Dylan Brooks. I know that Marcus Smart was kind of the Dylan Brooks replacement, but it's not the same, man. I just feel like Dylan Brooks brought a certain energy to that team that they just haven't been able to replace. And, I mean, they still haven't really replaced that as a need if we're talking about basketball as far as just having a guy that you can throw at, like, the top wings in the league. Like, yeah, Marcus Smart, you could to a certain extent, but he's, what, 6'2", 6'3", as opposed to a Dylan Brooks who's, like, a legit 3. So, yeah, I'm not really sold on Memphis as much as, you know, others are.
If Memphis can stay healthy in a West that's there for the taking and you have a young OKC team sitting at the top and a team that I believe no matter what happens, as long as they stay healthy, I believe they have finished the season with the number one seed in the West for the second year in a row. I think the door is wide open because even though Memphis has dealt with a plethora of injuries, if they can enter the playoffs healthy and intact with at least a top three seed, I think you have to give them a chance. And the reason why I say that is because we know the talent that this team possesses. And yeah, they are missing a wing. I do believe that Dylan Brooks is sorely missed, mostly on the defensive end. But like you said, for his ability to be able to check up against some of the best wings in the West, such as LeBron James, such as Anthony Edwards and the like thereof. But I believe that they can seek to try and make a move or two if they continue to keep this momentum that they have and get a wing in the building. But I like the depth that they have, and I think it's a positive anytime you have certain injuries and you have these guys that are able to step up and show you that they can be key rotational pieces. Because these pieces, if they're not all able to shine and thrive in Memphis, guess what? You can flip some of these guys and get the pieces that you need in the effort to win a championship. I like Desmond Bane's game a lot. And Ja Morant, we know what he brings to the table. He's not even really been playing a lot of minutes since his return. I believe he's only been playing maybe 25 to 27 minutes a game. And they've been taking care of business. Only thing that concerns me with Memphis is we talked about before in the past in our private conversations is can Jaren Jackson Jr. find a way to stay out of foul trouble. That's the only thing. You know, if he can't do that or find a way to maintain his discipline as a defender, then that can put them behind the eight ball a little bit. But when I look at the West right now, the only team that's really proven is Denver. So it's a free-for-all no matter where I look. And if I had to put, you know, money on a series between who could win between Memphis and Oklahoma City at full strength, based on what I've seen in recent playoffs, of course, I'm going to go with the more experienced team, even though that's a series that could be decided within 6-7 games and go down to the wire. So
that's I not, like him as a legit contender. Whoa. You didn't answer that question.
What you mean I didn't answer the question?
So you got OKC and Memphis. You're saying that you're taking Memphis in that series?
I would, based off their experience level. There's no disrespect to Oklahoma City, but they have had more experience.
I mean, they haven't been to a conference finals, have they?
No, but neither has Oklahoma City.
Right.
I mean they're kind of even in that regard.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. So I
think that's the biggest problem a lot of NBA fans have. They're looking for teams that they could give the benefit of the doubt to. I'm not saying you, but just in general. They're looking for teams that they can give benefit of the doubt to. However, it's not too many teams that you can do that with in this current era.
Well, yeah. See, that's why I was just asking for clarity because you didn't state a particular team. You just mentioned the more experienced team. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, nah, they about even as far as experience go. I think Memphis might have more playoff wins. I mean, series wins with their core. I get that part. But they haven't really advanced far into the playoffs.
Yeah, they had made a conference finals run.
So that's all I'm saying in that regard. But it is what I will say to challenge what you said about Memphis and your belief in them this season, right? What's the difference between Memphis and OKC right now? Because you speak about depth with Memphis the same way we came into the show speaking about the depth with Golden State, right? Now, Memphis does have size, but they also have far more injuries maybe than the Warriors have.
Definitely.
So, do you feel like those two teams are on an even playing field?
Memphis and Golden State?
Yeah.
I tell you the truth, that's a great question. I haven't thought about that. I will say I like Memphis from the standpoint of their younger roster. And I think that helps to benefit them in a series if those two teams were to meet again in the playoffs, which, as we know, they have a couple of years ago in Golden State, packed them up to six games.
Yeah. And the Memphis took them out in a play-in.
In a play-in a couple years ago as well, back in 2021, so, I believe.
Yeah, so about 1-1 in the postseason right now.
Yeah. I would say that's one of the biggest rivalries in basketball at the moment.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, at the moment.
I mean, especially if you just consider, like, it's Ja against Steph, and at one point people were ready to crown Ja as the next face of the league, and, I mean, Steph has that spot right now. So, yeah, it's always good. It should be something there.
And then, you know, you got the old guys going up against the new kids on the block, or at the time they were. But even though these guys are still young, they're still trying to prove themselves and that they have what it takes, rather, to win a championship. Now, Memphis head coach Taylor Jenkins, a lot like Steve Kerr, he's playing at least 10 or more guys in his rotation on a nightly basis. And in spite of featuring a bevy of young talent like we talked about, this is a franchise that can seek to make a move prior to the trade deadline to further bolster their roster in the pursuit of going on a deep run in the playoffs. Now, I know that we've discussed the Grizzlies off the record many a times over the past couple of years, but when you look at their current roster, what would you say is the biggest need right now if they were to seek to make a move at the trade deadline?
Same thing like the Golden State Warriors. Who's the second option? You need a second option on the team. Somebody that can truly carry the offensive load when Ja's in the game and when Ja's not. I mean, Ja takes a lot of punishment. So the guy I'm looking at, and I've been saying for years, is Brandon Ingram. I think Brandon Ingram, former All-Star, I believe averaged at 1.25, 26 a game, a 6'9 wing. He can defend when he's locked in, can score in isolation. And sometimes that's what it comes down to, it's especially deep into the playoffs. Do you have a guy that can get you a bucket from the mid-range in isolation when the game gets tight? Brandon Ingram, he's one of those rare breeds that can do it. And Memphis, you don't get free agents to come to Memphis. You know, they've been having to draft and make trades to build that roster. Brandon Ingram, he's not a free agent at the moment, but he's on a one-year deal. And I believe you put together like Marcus Smart, Brandon Clark's contract, and maybe one or two of those young guys on the roster, that might be enough to get Brandon Ingram over in Memphis. And I think if you can get a guy like that, then maybe I can start thinking about them in the conference finals potentially.
Yeah, I know you've been vocal with me a few times and letting it be known that Brandon Ingram would be a perfect fit in Memphis, and I could see that. But if in the event that they weren't able to get him, and it would make a lot of sense if they sought to get him, because you don't have to sign him to a long-term extension if you don't like what you see. But if they were looking for a guy that they could probably plug in for a couple of years, I would look at, if they couldn't get Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma could be a nice alternative. Or maybe a Jeremy Grant. They definitely got to get a wing. I don't disagree with you there. A wing with some size, a wing that's able to not only just provide size, but can shoot the ball and serve as a playmaker for guys. And I think Kyle Kuzma might be a nice guy in that locker room just from the standpoint of he's played on a championship team and he's been on some stages that this Memphis team is trying to go. Yeah, he's not the. I know you looking for the main star.
It's not even the main star part. It was just like you were saying, like, oh no, I was just laughing because I don't know these people personally, but I'm just looking at like the thought of like Ja Morant and Desmond Bane looking at Kyle Kuzma as the guy with the experience on the team. That was just a funny thought in my head.
Well, you know, that's the modern day NBA world we live in, Torrance. I mean, it ain't like back in the day where you had OGs, you know, 10 plus years, like guys come in young now.
No, it ain't even just that. It's just that, like, I don't know. I know, like, rings matter and shit like that, but from Ja Morant, it's like, bro, I'm damn near an MVP level player. You still Kyle Kuzma. Like, you won and you played your role. But I'm Ja Morant and you Kyle Kuzma. Like, bro, just do your job. I'm gonna do my job and we gonna be cool. Like, I don't need your experience talk from you. That's just how I look at certain things. But for a roster building way, yeah, I do agree. Like, Kyle Kuzma, of course.
Yeah, I mean, they got to get a wing. Somebody that's been in playoff situations and knows how to play in those environments. So I think Brandon Ingram would be the ideal guy. But if you can't get him, I think you look at a Kyle Kuzma or Jeremy Grant.
And I think Brandon Ingram is just a fit in Memphis. Like, you just talk about the city, the history of, like, that team. When you look at the Tony Allen, Zach Randolph,
the
Mark
Gasol.
Grit and grind era, you know, you just throw Brandon Ingram and Ja Morant over there, like, you know, culturally, I think that'll be something nice. And he's from the next state over there in North Carolina.
Carolina,
you know,
that's true.
And I always kind of was like, okay, maybe the Hornets too, but they got Brandon Miller and Miles Bridges over there, so they pretty cool in that spot right now. So I think Memphis, I mean, and then shit, why wouldn't they? I mean, like I said, who else Memphis gonna be able to get? And
yeah,
you wouldn't
they
have to
got an
give
uphill
up much.
battle.
And you wouldn't have to give up much to get them. I mean, at least in my head, you wouldn't. Like, right now, the Pelicans need healthy bodies. Like, it's the best time to make the trade, really.
Yeah, but how many trades do you see in the NBA that go down before Christmas Day? I'm trying to – I don't think I've seen one since, like – well, I'm not going to say that. But we've had big trades go down, like Jimmy Butler to Philly. That was one. But they don't happen often.
We
it
gotta
usually
wait to
happen like around shortly after New Year's.
Yeah, that's because of the December 15th rule. That's when most of the contracts that got signed over the offseason, they become eligible to get traded. And then the rest of the contracts, I believe the latest date is January 15th.
But pushing the show along and moving from all the chatter about two premier teams in the West to talk about a team out East in the Boston Celtics. As the defending world champs have captured wins in 7 out of their last 8 games, in addition to receiving the fortunate news of one of their top contributors returning to action this past week, is all-star big man Kristaps Porzingis recently made his season debut after being cleared to return to action following surgery on his ankle over the summer following the NBA Finals, and has done nothing but provide an instant boost at both ends of the floor, averaging 19.3 points and 7.3 rebounds per contest on 50% shooting from the floor through his first 3 games back. When most basketball observers look at the Celtics from the top down as far as it pertains to their roster, Torrance, we know what Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum provide them with on a nightly basis when they're in the lineup. However, it seems as if when Kristaps Porzingis is on the floor, that Boston is able to annihilate teams on a different level. I know we've talked about guys who are in the conversation for top number 3 options in the league privately quite often over the years. What makes the unicorn such a game changer for Boston? And do you believe that he's their most valuable player in regards to what he provides on a nightly basis when healthy?
Oh, man, obviously, him being the unicorn, I mean, that's because he has rare traits. And now the Boston Celtics get the benefit from those rare traits. He's 7'3". He can shoot the 3, but he can also post up very well. And he's a good defender. He protects the rim, shot blocker. So he's not a liability on either end. He's actually exceptional on both ends. And the fact that he can score in the paint and from the three-point line makes him deadly at the free throw line. And that's usually where I see the Celtics take the biggest advantage with him. When he gets that ball at that free throw line in the middle of the court, and you got a team that's really trying to shoot 53s a game, it's like, are you going to leave him one-on-one where he's got the height advantage over pretty much everybody? And if they somehow manage to get a switch before he got the ball, now he has a guard on him or a small wing. You're going to come double team, and now he's 7'3". He can pass right over the top to get one of those threes that the Celtics are, like, hunting down anyway. They're looking to shoot 50 a game, and now you got an easier way to get it. Now, do I think he's the most valuable player? No. I think he's the most impactful player when he's healthy, but, of course, the most valuable player, probably Jason Tatum, who might actually be the most valuable player of the league this year. If we go off of traditional metrics of what used to win the MVP, you know, being number one in your conference for starts. But, I mean, Porzingis, man, that's still crazy that the Celtics are able to pull that move off, too. People talk about the Drew move, but Porzingis' move was probably just as crazy.
Yeah, to me, that was the biggest move of the offseason in the summer of 2023. I don't know how they was able to pull that one off. But I think what makes him such a game changer, man, is just his ability to impact games on the defensive end of the floor. I know you talk about what he does on the offensive end, and that's where he makes his bread and butter. But at the same time, defensively, he unlocks a lot of things for them with his ability to protect the rim. And you could see just how much they were missing his presence just when in moments of him touching the floor against the LA Clippers when he made his debut last week. And then to see him in person still making a difference. Like, he allows them, when he blocks shots and gets rebounds, to get out and run. And not only just get out and run, like you say, push the ball up the floor and get those three-point shots that they want to seek out and hunt. And you said it best. They're going to take over 50 a game. Because I kept telling somebody that when I was at the game the other night, I said, look, they're going to get up at least 54 threes. I said that after they went 9-14 to start the night from three. And I don't know how you can stop that. And you add the fact that he could pick and pop, pick and roll. He looks like the best number three option in the league over there. And I don't believe he's their most valuable player. But it's some nights where it does appear as though he is when you look at the little things that he does. Because he's the one, like you said, he leaves the lasting impact on games. And defensively, I think he helps take them to another level.
Yeah, he definitely does. Like I said, that was a crazy move that they were able to make. And like, considering the fact that they playing five out, I mean, besides Jokic, Embiid, Anthony Davis, yeah, I don't think there's Wemby. But Wemby, he hasn't gotten to the playoffs yet. And the Sixers are struggling. And the Lakers are the Lakers. So we can't really worry about them because Jokic handles them. I mean, Boston, like, as far as that Porzingis matchup, they have no worries in that department. And that's crazy considering when you got two A-level wings as well, which most teams don't have.
The Celtics are currently sitting second in the Eastern Conference as of this recording with a 17-4 record through the first 21 games of the season and are only a game behind the Cleveland Cavaliers after dropping a tough contest on the road against them without Jaylen Brown and Derrick White due to an illness and foot injury respectively this past weekend. With the first quarter of the season almost coming to a close, what are your overall thoughts on the Celtics' play thus far?
Man, looking like they trying to repeat, honestly. You know, I guess not. It hasn't been, well, record-wise, it's been dominant, but it hasn't been just like this crazy dominant run. Like you said, we're just now getting Porzingis back. JB was out. We got Drew's dealing with a knee injury. So they haven't been healthy all the way yet this season, despite their record. But one of the most important things, though, is Jason Tatum. He's been very aggressive this season. Like, and not even just, like, from a shot attempt standpoint. It's just when you've seen those games against Cleveland, You saw him in the fourth quarters, like attacking the rim in ways that we've been begging him to do since the 22 finals.
Yeah.
Where it's like, bro, you 6'10". You a threat to shoot from anywhere on the court, bro. But if you just get to the rim and draw some fouls, you will make things a lot easier for yourself and your team, just as an observer watching. And like I said earlier, he might be the MVP this season. And he's definitely looking to – he looks like he's taking on the challenge of getting that repeat this season and winning MVP, honestly. Like, I think he is kind of slighted by the fact he didn't win one of those awards during the postseason last year. And he should have definitely.
And not to mention what happened at the Olympics in Paris over the summer too. I think that's definitely lit the fire under him. And
hey,
right
hey,
now
wait, hold on, time up. Hey, look, ain't that crazy though? Like, Steve Kerr's hilarious. You get the Warriors, you playing guys who probably should be wearing suits some night. And the Olympics come and you just couldn't find no minutes for me. Like, it was just too hard for you to find minutes for Jason Tatum.
Oh, man, that was a conversation in the summer. But nevertheless, like you said, he is playing at an MVP level. He's averaging 28.4 points, 8.6 rebounds, and 5.6 assists per game in almost 37 minutes of action. Has yet to miss a game this season as well. He's played in all 21 games for Boston. And we talk about the best ability being availability, especially for these performance awards in the NBA. He's definitely a guy that should be among the thicker players in the MVP conversation, and a guy that I kind of feel bad for leaving out a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Anthony Davis being in that conversation, which I still believe that he is. But, you know, you watch him up close in person, and it's amazing to see the growth that he's exhibited over the last couple of years since losing to the Golden State Warriors in the 2022 NBA Finals. He had a weekly best 35 points to go alongside of 14 rebounds and 5 assists on 12 of 18 shooting from the floor in 36 minutes of play against the Chicago Bulls at the Madhouse on Madison last week on Black Friday. So he's put up 30 or more in two out of his last three contests as well. So I like what Jason Tatum has been able to do. And I look at them and I think, when I watch them play, I can't help but ask myself some nights, who really can beat them in a best of seven series in the East? I don't see anybody.
Well,
I see a couple teams that match up well, but offensively, from the firepower standpoint, the way that they're coming at you, like it's tough.
But I'm not somebody that just believes because they shooting threes and they making them at a high rate. I don't think that's where their advantage lies. The advantage lies is more from a strategy standpoint, the fact that they legit can play 5-0. Because a lot of teams, they are going to shoot. They're going to try to match them in three-point shooting, but you don't have five guys who are legit two-way players. Most teams always got that one guy that's struggling on one end of the court. You got an elite defender in there who can't bring you anything on offense. So now guys backing up and they're able to rotate to the guys that they really need to stop easier. Or you got somebody that's, as Patrick Beverley called it, a cone on defense. Somebody that they're going to just point out in pick and roll situations, try to draw in to get the switch. You know, the Celtics, you can't do that with them. Whether it's Derek White, he can hold his own for a given possession against a wing. Drew Holiday, that guy does it. Post defense, whatever you need. Then obviously, like we say, a Porzingis. Like, yeah, you know, you see teams try to draw out Rudy Gobert to the perimeter. Yeah, I mean, Porzingis has some knee injuries, you know, here and there, foot injuries. But for the most part, the guy can actually move his feet well on the perimeter. And he's a good shot blocker. So, I mean, that's what the advantage to me really is. It's the defense and just the switchability of the starting five.
You know, when you put it like that, that is something to think about, especially just watching that chess match between them and the Bulls last week. Because as you talked about on here, those are two of the top three teams in three-point attempts per game. And even though Nikola Vucevic is spectacular and hit like several triples on the night, felt like it was certain times isolated defensively You know, he not giving you the same thing that Porzingis is. Like you said, their ability to play five out with all of their guys being two-way players at both ends of the floor, yeah, that's definitely a major advantage that every NBA team does not have.
And see, and like the reason I'm not too focused on the threes either is because you look at another team that's an offensive juggernaut. Well, maybe not as much this season as they were previous years, but the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets, they weren't a high volume, like 3-point shooting team. What makes Denver dangerous is that they can get a bucket on each possession. Easy. Jokic, Murray.
Murray. Moving on from discussing a team that is currently maintaining its winning ways to another within the Eastern Conference that is trying to discover it again, as recent reports out of the city of brotherly love are indicating that the Philadelphia 76ers will not seek to wave the white flag despite getting off to a 4-14 start. According to ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps, there's been a major talking point among league scouts, coaches, and executives about how nobody believes that the Sixers will make an attempt to retain their 2025 first-round draft pick, primarily due to the fact that Philadelphia hasn't hardly had their best lineup available to them to start the regular season due to injuries to the likes of Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, and Paul George. Now, for those who don't know, the Sixers traded their 2025 first-round pick to the Oklahoma City Thunder, but since it is a top six protected pick, it can only convey to OKC if it falls outside of the top six. Paul George just recently returned to the Sixers lineup, Torrance, for the second time this year after missing three games due to a bone bruise in his left knee. As a nine-time All-Star, has missed nine out of Philadelphia's first 18 games due to injuries on the young season, and has only been on the court with Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey for a total of 6 minutes this season as of this recording. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid has only managed to play in a total of four contests, with the Sixers holding an 0-4 record in games where the former MVP is suited up. Last week, we discussed the play of rookie guard Jared McCain in Philly, who has been a bright spot for them during these times. Kelly Oubre Jr., Caleb Martin, and Gershon Yabusele have also taken on significant roles and fared rather well individually. However, when you look at where the Sixers currently are in the Eastern Conference standings through the first quarter of the year, do you think they still have enough time to even make a run and securing a play-in tournament spot for the second year in a row? And is it even worth it in your estimation?
Yeah, they got enough. They still got enough time and talent to do it. I mean, they're only three games back from the 10th spot. Like, even despite how bad the season has started, they're only like three games back. So you still have Joel Embiid. What do you got about, what, 60 games left this season? Let's just say he plays 40 of them. I think Paul George has to play some games at some point. I mean, you got to believe these things at some point. So it being the Eastern Conference, only three games back from the 10th spot in the play-in, and as we mentioned, the East is pretty wide open. I mean, Boston's proven. Cleveland's off to a great start, but they're not proven. Milwaukee, they're, I mean, they kind of like picking up steam at the moment, but Doc Rivers still coaches on their team. And and Darvin Ham over there too. So, like, you know, let the media tell it. Something bad gonna happen as far as the coaching in the playoffs at some point with them guys. That ain't me saying that. That's what the TV told me. But nah, man. But seriously though, yeah, like Philly, they still got a chance in the East to make something happen. Do you believe in Philadelphia? Of course not. Do you believe that Joel Embiid will actually be healthy this season? No. Paul George? No. But like, you got to look at it like it's Philly, man. It's Rocky. You got to believe. You know what I'm saying? You got to get up. You got to run up them steps. You got to put one foot in front of the other. So why not, man? Go for it.
They obviously have a chance to make the play-in tournament. Like you said, East is not the strongest conference when you compare them side by side to the West. It's a very top-heavy conference. And I believe the top three. I'm not going to say it's officially cemented, but I wouldn't be surprised if the top three as we currently see it in the East stays that way in that order. I would not be. And it's a possibility if you put together a good week of basketball that you could find yourself going from where they are to potentially a fifth or a sixth seed. So it's not out the realm of cards that they can not only get a playing spot, but a possible playoff spot if they could get hot. However, I do question whether or not it's worth it sometimes because the upcoming draft class will feature several players that are widely regarded, such as a Cooper Flagg, such as Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper, VJ Edgecombe, to name a few. And when you look at the Sixers roster with the talent that they do have, infusing some young guys in the mix with that could provide a boost for them in the years to come under Nick Nurse. So I'm not going to say that you should punt away your season this early, and I'm not an advocate for tanking, especially when it comes to a franchise that is very familiar with that, as we know. And they did a lot of that in the last decade. But I wonder what's the long-term goal for Philadelphia in a season where you've already openly said we're not playing Joel Embiid back-to-back games and we're putting a maintenance plan on Paul George and a minutes restriction on him until he shows us that he's healthy consistently enough to play the amount of minutes that we need him to play.
Nah, man, look. Like you just said, this the process right here. And right now, some would say that the process is the problem. You got a culture of we can just punt this season away.
I'm not saying that.
We'll try again next year, you know? And look what happened. Jahlil Okafor out the league. Ben Simmons. I mean, he in the league, but he ain't really in the league for real like he used to be. And now we're seeing Joel Embiid. You know, he in the league, but he ain't always at work. You know, so you gotta change the culture in there. And punting them away a season, that's reverting back to old times. We can't do that. Now, I'm not saying you saying that in particular.
Yeah, I do a big show, yeah.
But, it's not about, it ain't about you at the moment. We just, but look. Now, if you guys get the pick in the top six just because Embiid and Paul George hurt and you able to get a Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey, somebody to pair with McCain and Maxey in that backcourt, I mean, that's great. But if I end up in the top six and actually have a chance to pick one of those guys, then we got to trade Joel Embiid. Like, we got to stop messing around and go ahead and do what then needed to be done. Now, between me and you, I've always said before Ben Simmons started tweaking that I would have traded Joel Embiid before Ben Simmons.
You did.
I've always said, like, bro always hurt. Bro, just he a scoring machine. Like, yeah, he helped. He's great defensively when he locked in, but he's not always locked in. And you would have got a lot for him. And I thought Ben Simmons at the time, if you look at Philly's like last decade, the best stretch of basketball they played was without Joel Embiid and with Ben Simmons leading the show, and they had shooters surrounding him. Give Tyrese Maxey that same chance. You got McCain in there. And if y'all do punt the season away, maybe you get one of the top three picks in the draft. But you got to get rid of Joel Embiid, man. He's still the last piece lingering from those bad days when, like, they had the worst record in the league for consecutive years. He got his MVP. He got his gold medal. Like, it's just time to go and get what you can for dude. Like, he cool, man.
Why do you think that? I gotta ask you that because wasn't something that I had on my radar. But since we you brought him up and we talking about like state your case on that.
I'm stating the case. Been getting stated the whole time, bro. Look, I'm just saying, like, then you got little things with him, like you ducking the matchup with Jokic in Denver. You know what I'm saying? You want to play him at home at the crib in Philly. but you don't want to go to the altitude and give him, you know what I'm saying, run him his fade, as they say on the West Coast. You know what I'm saying? Give him his one-on-one. So, and I'm somebody that, like, at one point felt like Embiid was better than Jokic. But, you know, I seen the light, the white light, but a light nonetheless.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, Jokic ain't ducking no smoke from nobody no night in the league. And bro always playing. He's never missing games. Even Anthony Davis, a guy that had a reputation for not always playing. Anthony Davis then turned the narrative around. Well, you know what I'm saying? When was the last time we talked about Anthony Davis being injured? It's been a little minute. Bro, Embiid.
Well, yeah, the last two years, he's been healthy. Yes, he has. I give him that.
All we saying is just show us, bro. That's it. Bro, you ain't even give us a chance this year. He jumped off the porch and said, hey, I ain't playing back-to-backs. Now, whether that's an organization decision, his decision, it don't matter at this point, bro. Like, as a leader, as a guy that want to win a championship, bro, you got to galvanize the team, bro. You was just on Team USA. You saw Bron put the Captain America suit on. You saw Steph rise to the occasion. You saw true champions, like, show will and determination. Now, you was a part of it.
He was. He had a big game against Serbia. He had some moments in the semifinal.
All right. I mean, look. Look, bro. All of that's understandable, but we know who was out there really making moves, bro.
At the end of the day, you win as a team, you lose as a team.
But a lot of them guys on that team, they already won before him. That's all we saying.
No, I'm not taking away from all other right, guys. So look. Let's keep it.
No, it's still it's right there because I'm just providing you an example of you were just surrounded by guys who do it. And you carry none of that into the next season with you. Like, right or wrong, Anthony Edwards, you've seen how the Olympics has affected him in his play. He's shooting more threes, but he's also trying to step up as a leader and calling guys out, whether it's on the court or in the media, and really taking on a role of leadership. When has Joel Embiid did that? He hasn't. We just heard reports of somebody in the locker room asking him to show up every day on time to work. Like, that's the little stuff, bro. Like, you seen Will Smith said in an interview before, he was like, hey, man, I'm always on time. Like, it's just sometimes the advice and the way to win is just simple. Like, I'm just on time. Bro, you're not even showing up on time, and you don't even got to work. Imagine that. You got to show all day. Hey, they just said show up to work today. You ain't got to work, but just show up. Bro, people would be at work an hour early knowing that. And you can't get to work on time, bro. Y'all never gonna win, bro. It's time to go.
I don't know how the hell we got here with this shit, but next time. NBA national TV schedule. LeBron James and Anthony Davis lead the Lakers down in South Beach to square off the 2020 NBA Finals rematch against their fellow All-Star peer Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat on Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time and 6:30 p.m. Central Time on NBA TV. Followed by a nightcap showdown between two Western Conference foes that recently met up in NBA Cup play on Black Friday as Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle will lead the Timberwolves into the brand new Intuit Dome to go toe-to-toe with James Harden and the LA Clippers at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time and 9:30 p.m. Central Time following Lakers at Heat on NBA TV. Other games on the national schedule this week include a matchup between two of the game's premier forwards going down on ESPN. As Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks seek to travel on the road and continue their recent winning ways versus Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics in the opening game of the night at TD Garden going down at 7:30 p.m. Eastern and 6:30 p.m. Central Time, followed by Timberwolves and Warriors in San Francisco to cap off ESPN's NBA Friday night doubleheader. What intriguing showdowns and matchups do you believe that fans should have their eyes on in Week 7?
All right. So we're going to start Thursday. We got Denver at Cleveland. I want to see the matchup with Jokic against Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Those two have been doing a great job this season defensively and offensively. And, I mean, we talking about Jokic, man, bro, one of the greatest centers ever. So Anytime you got that guy coming to town, I think it's just a good way to like measure yourself. You done well against Boston this season. Now let's see how you go against the former champs. Friday, we got the Spurs against the Kings. Spurs up 2-0 right now in that regular season matchup. But I look at this like almost another measuring stick game. You the Spurs, right now you 10th in the West in that play-in spot. That's a spot usually occupied by the Sacramento Kings. And the Spurs the last few years have been at the bottom of the conference. So you starting to, go up the ranks, Mortal Kombat style. Now let's just see if you can kind of finish them off, really show that, all right, we're a team at the competing at this level now. Go ahead and get this W, hopefully Friday. And then Saturday we got Memphis against Boston. In Boston, like we spoke about earlier, Memphis a team that if they can get healthy, might could be a contender. And they going to Boston where, I mean, it's hard to win there. But I expect to be a great game. Ja Morant against Jason Tatum. Once again, the NBA not putting the new stars of the league on national TV in these big matchups. Hey, but maybe they want us to R by league pass.
It's got to be at this point. The game of the week for me is the Los Angeles Lakers against the Atlanta Hawks on Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 p.m. Central Time, and I'm going to tell you why. It's very simple for me. The Atlanta Hawks, for some odd reason, when it comes to playing against the top-notch teams in the league, they just find a way to win games. They beat the Celtics in NBA Cup play. They won Group C in the East, and then they happened to take down the Cleveland Cavaliers twice over the course of a 3-day span. In one of those games, we saw Trae Young post a 20-20 line. And Trae Young has always been the forgotten point guard in his era. We always talk about Luka Doncic, and you had these conversations on Twitter about who would you take between a list of guards, and you very rarely see Trae Young's name come up. Trae Young continues to get his job done, nevertheless, though. Dyson Daniels is a young emerging wing that has made his mark big time defensively, a guy that I was always high on dating back this time with the New Orleans Pelicans a couple of years ago when they got off to a hot start with CJ McCollum and Zion Williamson. And currently, Atlanta is, I believe, within the thick of the play-in race. Actually, no, they're six in the East with an 11-11 record, 500. Let's see if they can stay afloat. They're on a four-game winning streak. You got LeBron James and Anthony Davis coming into town. They're going to have a big constituency of Laker fans in Atlanta. Most games in Atlanta will feature the road team fans at a high rate. And let's see how the Hawks respond to it. Based on how they responded throughout the season, looks like, it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, man. So what do you think about Jalen Johnson?
Can't forget about Jalen Johnson. Jalen Johnson's having a hell of a season, putting up 25-5. I mean, I try not to forget about guys, but
No, I wasn't more
he's
so.
been one of the top wings in the league,
Who do
for
you, but
sure.
do you feel like, I don't know, this is kind of like some BS to a certain extent, BS typical media stuff, but at this moment, it's kind of like the Philadelphia situation to me in a lot of ways. Do you feel like Jalen Johnson is the Tyrese Maxey to Trae Young's Joel Embiid, possibly? Or do you feel like that situation is becoming a lot more stable? Because every year it's a Trae Young trade rumor. Every year.
Yes, it is. It is.
And okay, you got Jalen Johnson last year. So it's like, okay, we got a fresh new piece in. Now this year is Dyson Daniels to go on top of that. And you already got the new coach in Quinn Snyder. So like at this point, you almost looking at it like this is a pivot moment. Do you keep Trae Young and continue and see where this goes step by step? Or do you go all in on the new young guys that you have in Quinn Snyder and move on from Trae Young? I say that because they are playing the Lakers, and that's been one of the rumored trade destinations for Trae Young.
It has, and he's had quite a few other ones in the Western Conference, but the Lakers has definitely been a popular one. I think you keep him for now. Let's see how it goes. Trae Young has played incredible basketball there, and like you said, I think as long as he stays healthy and this group is competing at a high level, they're going to have a chance more often than not to win some games. And I like this young group beside him. It's just a
Yeah.
matter of whether or not Quinn Snyder can continue to unlock some things that can help them move upward in the Eastern Conference. I know a lot of times I just feel like we're very quick to want to, you know, dispatch certain things and break things up, blow it all up, you know.
Play 2K.
Yeah, you know, everybody want to be a general manager. And I get it to a certain extent. I like playing general manager myself sometimes, but I wouldn't trade Trae Young at this point in time if I'm Atlanta. I would see what I have, especially when the million-dollar question in my eyes would be, if you trade him, who's running a one for you?
Hey, I mean, maybe that's a question they'll look to solve in a draft or something like that. Can't have it all when you rebuild it.
But at the same time, I mean, my thing with Atlanta is they're playing well against the top teams in the league. It's the team that are the sub 500 teams that they're struggling against. You can get it together against those teams and find your mental focus, you might be able to elevate yourself up in the standings to within that 4 or 5 rank.
Yeah, definitely agree.
Well, like I said, that concludes this week's edition of the New 24 Podcast. Thank you all so much for listening in once again and following what we have to say on all the major trending topics over the last week around the NBA. If you've enjoyed what you've heard through the first 4 episodes thus far, even this episode itself, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening from and leave us a 5-star rating, as we can't express enough just how much we appreciate your support. You can listen to the New 24 Podcast across all of the major podcast platforms, such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify, in addition to Pandora and iHeartRadio as well. We're now officially available on those outlets as well. And you can also stay connected and up to date on all the episode releases as soon as they drop for you every Wednesday morning on our RSS feed that you can find at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. You can also follow both of us on Twitter or X as well at What Gave Said, GAVE. And Torrance at T-Stacks, that's STACKS, to stay engaged on show announcements or to converse with us on the game itself, to keep the conversations on topics alive, even when we're not recording or in front of the microphone. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Taggart, so long, everybody.